Michael Knight.
It always happens if you give the drummer a break, you know, he just goes right into a solo. That's just the way they are. That's a drummer for you. 12:15, this is the initiative-based show called The Agenda. I'm Michael Knight. 54 degrees on a gray day here in Wenatchee Town. We're going to talk about No on 1631 and also the diaper drive from Wenatchee. Two items that have been top of mind for me for some time. What's going on with that diaper drive? And should I vote yes or no on 1631? But consider this first. If you want to write the intricate wording that's found in state initiatives, and you intend to do this for a living, you must have a few skills on your side if you want to succeed. Firstly, abandon all hope, ye who enter here. Initiative writing is not for the weak of heart or those challenged by the conventions of either truth or respect. And yes, that does include self-respect. Now, let's begin by free associating your topic, and it doesn't matter what it is, with known negative people, places, or things. Here's an example. Nancy Pelosi is buying entire neighborhoods in Seattle and sowing smallpox virus in the window box that was once used by your grandmother. So vote no on smallpox in your groceries, even Dr. Pepper. Yes, there's more. Mitch McConnell is killing poodle puppies with a ball-peen hammer, as any career politician would do. Vote yes on more hammers for patriots. Yeah, there's more. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh eats 5 important federal statutes every day, and he will do so until you stop him. Vote no on Washington's legal lunch scam. How can this man eat the law? Where will it end? Or, the Californians have been rioting nonstop for 10 days, part of the liberal plan to destabilize the dairy industry. Vote yes on riots for Washington. We can't afford to sit quietly by while the liberals destroy Holsteins and other butter products. Riot in Washington because we can't afford peace on the farm in our time. And my favorite, vote no on history. In Washington, it will always be 1959. In our Washington, braceros pick cherries at night, out of sight, out of mind. In our Washington, we know what to do with socialists like Richie Valens and Alex Cora. In our Washington, history bogs down progress. Vote no on history. And really, who has the time for it anyway? Where will it end? Let's adhere to our rural values and the reliable beauty of someone ground up by the machine of the future, so vote no on history. It saves precious, beautiful Washington time. Local time at the tone? Beep! Is 1959. Now you're prepared to join the fine intellectual discourse that's known as initiative writing. It's a way to fill the void in a stranger's life with a fear that was not there yesterday. A slight exaggeration, but only slight. Now I'd like you to join my very special guest who's been kind enough to join me. Now, I hope he's still on the line after that introduction. Todd Myers is here to vote no on 1631. Hi, Todd. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Let's start. Forget about everything I just said. That's just by way of introduction. Let's talk about 1631. I don't know anything about it. Should I vote yes or no?
Well, it depends on how you feel about taxes and climate change. So Initiative 1631 is a carbon tax that will raise the price of CO2 emissions by about $15 a ton, and then it goes up $2 a metric ton every year plus inflation. So what does that mean in real world? That means that it starts out at about 13 cents a gallon and then goes immediately up to about 15 cents a gallon, and then goes up almost 2 cents a gallon every year in perpetuity. It also means that you'll pay more for your home heating for natural gas. And then in Wenatchee, you won't pay that much for electricity because you guys have a lot of hydro. So mostly it'll be a gas tax and then a home heating tax and then a little bit for electricity. And we estimate that it will cost about $250 for the average family with 2 cars in Washington State for the first year, going up to about $700, more than $700 a year after about 10 years. So it'll start off at a couple of bags of groceries or a couple of weeks of groceries.
So it is a carbon tax. Why has Washington struggled with this carbon tax, and not just this time, but many times in the past?
Well, because it's a tax and people don't like taxes. And so I think that's one thing. What's interesting about this is 2 years ago we voted down a carbon tax that actually cut sales taxes. And so it was trying to be revenue neutral. So you'd pay more a little bit here, but you'd save on sales taxes. This one makes no pretense. This one just simply says it is a huge tax increase. It will raise basically $1 billion a year in the early years. So it's a pretty significant tax increase. And then the money is spent by a 15-member board. Only one of those is elected, the Commissioner of Public Lands, and the other 14 are all unelected, appointed by the governor, and they get to spend the money basically however they want.
Where did this idea of a board come from? Why do we need a board if we have a tax?
Well, because the environmental community who wrote the initiative wants control of the money, and they want to spend it the way they want. And it's for a variety of things. And what they will say is that it's to reduce carbon emissions or pollution. But actually what you see is there's a lot of things in there that are just sort of left-wing priorities. So one of the things that it recommends is that money can be used not only to pay for more transit, but also to do what's called transportation demand management, which essentially means toll roads everywhere, anywhere in the state, I should say everywhere, but anywhere in the state that they want toll roads. So they can do things like that. Now, how that will reduce CO2 emissions, I'm not too sure, but the board basically is given a free hand to spend it however they want.
Everybody would pay this carbon tax, right? What about corporations?
So most corporations and businesses would pay it. There are some exemptions. The exemptions primarily are for what are called energy-intensive trade-exposed industries. So the aluminum plant there in Wenatchee actually would be exempt because they worry that the tax would be so burdensome that it would actually cause the plant to close down and then move production overseas. So there are some exemptions like that. I think that's not a bad thing, that we're not, you know, trying to drive business out of state. But they do recognize that there's a very high cost to this tax. So the problem with that is then all of the impact of the tax is then funneled to businesses that don't have lobbyists, smaller businesses, and then also families. So in the initiative it says, here's the goals, here's the CO2 reduction goals we have to meet. Well, the burden of meeting those goals is not on those energy-intensive industries, but it's on families and businesses.
How is it that the actual industries that create this problem are not involved in the cleanup or in the so-called tax or the 1631, whatever you want to call it?
Well, that's right, and that I think that's a real challenge, and that's why, since they set very aggressive targets for CO2 reductions, when you take about 20% of the carbon emissions in Washington State off the table, that means that everyone else has to go over and above and do more. Now, it's not entirely irrational, right? We don't want to drive the aluminum plant out of Washington State that's there in Wenatchee or the one in Ferndale. But at the same time, it just means everybody else pays more.
Well, actually, the aluminum plant in Wenatchee drove themselves out of town. They left because their operations were costing them too much, and they're making all their aluminum in South America at a much reduced rate. They still pay here to keep the plant not open, but in abeyance. You know what that's like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
When you look at 1631, your side and the other side, you're no, the others are yes, and you hear a yes on 1631 ad on television or radio, what's your reaction?
Well, so just to be clear, we, the Washington Policy Center, we are a non-profit public policy, so we actually don't take a position yes or no. I have lots of concerns about this one, as you can tell, but I would say if there are people who say, look, it doesn't matter what it costs, we need to fight climate change, well, they're probably going to vote yes, but I think a lot of other folks who are concerned about taxes and then also about climate change, but who think it's more modest, I think, are more likely to vote no, because this initiative, it doesn't do a good job of reducing emissions. And that's one of the things that frustrates me when I hear the commercials, is they say, oh, we're going to create all this clean air and do all these other things. But actually, the initiative itself has no standard of effectiveness, no requirements for results, and no accountability. So if the board fails to meet those targets or meet reductions and deliver the promises, they're not held accountable. In fact, ironically, the taxes continue to go up. So only when, and the initiative says that if they succeed in meeting the targets, the taxes stop going up. If they fail, the taxes continue. So their failure is actually rewarded by they get more money to play with and we get more taxes. So it's a very backward incentive.
I can't understand. Who wrote this again?
It's primarily the environmental community. It's the Nature Conservancy, the Audubon Society, the Washington Conservation Voters, and others in the environmental community. And then some tribes also joined in.
And why are the tribes pro 1631 or anti?
Well,
yes. Why are they yes 1631?
They're yes. And the tribes were very clear early on. When this was being written, they said, look, we don't see enough money in this for the priorities we want. So if you don't give us more of what we want, then we will oppose it. They openly said that, the Colvilles did. And so the initiative now guarantees that 10% of the funding will go to projects for tribes. And then they said, okay, now that we have that, we'll support it. So they've been very clear about what their motivation is.
And do those projects on reservation land have to do anything to do with clean air or the environment or clean ecology projects?
They can be a variety of things. Either what it says is that they can also deal with the impacts of climate change. So if they say, look, we don't have fish or we don't have this or we don't have that because of climate change, they can request grants and funding for that. So it's very open-ended. I mean, there's a lot of things that would qualify for grants under this.
We're talking with Todd Myers. He's not representing no on 1631, but he's had an opportunity to look at both sides of this, and he encourages you to vote no on 1631. Do you think that the initiative process in the state of Washington or in any of the western states that seem to have these crazy initiatives every year that are difficult to discern about which way you want to vote, do you think the process is modern, streamlined, and efficient, or is it just a bucket where we throw weird ideas and a lot of money?
I think it's a little of both. There's certainly some strange ideas that get passed in, and I think this is a very long initiative. I think a very tiny percentage of the people who vote on this initiative will actually have read it and realize what's in there. And I think that's really dangerous, and there are a lot of things that are stuck in there. So, for instance, there's 5% of the money that goes to what's called the Environmental and Economic Justice Panel, and it's the initiative specifically says that members of that panel can vote themselves money, can accept money. Well, I think most people would look at that and say, that seems corrupt. That seems like self-dealing.
Sounds like the U.S. Senate, in fact.
Yes, exactly.
It can't be that corrupt.
Right. I mean, so I think, most people, you're never going to hear that in an ad. You're certainly not going to see that on the pro side. But long initiatives like this, they get an opportunity to tuck some things in there. But I've also seen initiatives that I like that hold government accountable, that give people a voice when they don't feel like they're being heard. I don't think this is one of those things. I think this is sort of a boondoggle that is written for special interest groups that benefit special interest groups.
So often when an initiative gets backing, the money comes from out of state by a special interest group like, for instance, Coca-Cola or Dr. Pepper. I've been hearing a lot from them during this initiative process in the run-up to the election. Are there no laws that prevents corporations who benefit from an initiative from foisting them on the voter?
They are given free speech rights like everybody else, and so on this initiative, like other initiatives, you will see businesses on both sides. So there are a lot of businesses that are pushing for 1631 that will benefit, green industry companies who stand to make a lot of money if this passes, and then you obviously see oil companies and other folks who are opposing it. So there are a lot of financial interests on both sides, to be sure. There's a lot of people who have their who are worried about how they're either going to gain or get hit by this initiative, but they have the free speech rights like everyone else.
I understand your opposition to this piece of it's not legislation, but it is an initiative that people can vote on to make state law. Do you think that because if it's poorly written, this one or any other initiative similar to it makes it difficult to do something right in terms of the environment, right in terms of green legal penalties for people who violate the clean air, the clean water? Are we teaching ourselves not to trust even our own laws or our own initiatives because of the way they're written and the way they're financed?
I think that's true, and I think that it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. 2 years ago on the revenue neutral carbon tax, many of the groups who support this now, like the Nature Conservancy, like the Washington Conservation Voters, opposed that because it didn't grow the size of government and because they didn't have a pot of money that they could control. And so as much as they argue that climate change is now in a serious crisis and that we can't wait anymore, well, 2 years ago they felt we could wait because they didn't get their cut. And I think that makes people very cynical about, okay, so what's really going on here? Do you really care about the issue, or are you just trying to cut yourself in on the deal? So I think there are real problems with that. I think, from my standpoint, on the environment. The environment is very politicized, it's very partisan, and it's very hard to get long-lasting, durable environmental policies because both the left and the right are constantly trying to undermine them so that they can get a better deal for themselves. That's ultimately bad for the environment.
You may know this and you may not, so forgive me for asking, but do you know of any state that prevents outside money from influencing the outcome of an initiative?
Well, it's very hard to do that because the Constitution of the United States says that everyone has a right to engage in campaigning. So, I mean, Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, has put $1 million of his own money into the Yes side. And he has the right to do that. You know, he doesn't live in Washington State. He didn't make his money in Washington State, but he, you know, he's going to try to influence our politics here. So people have to be careful about that. I think, you know, there are some times when people I don't like fund ideas that I do like. So I understand that there's a concern about who funds the initiatives on either side, but I think people need to take a close look about how it will affect them rather than just using, you know, who funds it as a shorthand.
Yeah, I would like to write an initiative that controls initiative advertising, but no one would support that, so there goes an initiative right down the drain.
You work at a radio station. I'm not sure they would support that.
It didn't have, yeah, we've broadcast a lot of lies over the past couple hours, that's for sure, for people who approve this advertising. What would you say in terms of the way the polls are looking at this initiative, 1631? Is it going to pass? Is it going to fail? Is it close?
It's very close. The last number I saw had the yes at 50% exactly, so very close. A lot of people are changing their minds. A lot of people are learning more. Like I said, this is a very complicated issue. The more people learn about it, the more they change their minds. So I will not hazard a guess one way or another other than just to say I think it will be very close.
Todd, you've been very well informed, and I appreciate your time today. Thanks for taking a chance on a live interview on the radio. I appreciate it so much.
Happy to do it. And if you want to learn more, go to WashingtonPolicy.org, where we write about these sorts of issues.
Thank you, Todd. Todd Myers, Washington Policy. He's talking about no on 1631. And as for radio station selling time to anybody, to anyone who comes to the door, that's pretty much our policy. However, we can't curse the message if we're part of the problem. So we're part of the advertising problem. People can just buy that time, tell you what they think, whether it's true or not, and it's up to you to make your decisions based on the lies of yes on one side and no on the other. I'm not certain that that's a well-informed populace. 1233 at News Radio 560 KPQ. This is The Agenda.
You're listening, Judge. The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
1236 here in Wenatchee Town, 55 degrees outside, and kind of a, looks like it's going to rain. That's the kind of day it is. And my very special guests at this hour, Callie Klein and Corey Bautista, we're here to talk about the diaper drive that's being put together by the Junior Service League of Washington and the memberships thereof. So welcome, ladies. It's nice to have you here. I think I know what the diaper drive is all about, but fill me in anyway. Who wants to start?
Silence.
Kelly?
Thank you for having us. So this Saturday, the 27th, is Make a Difference Day. And we once again are doing the Women's Service League diaper drive. So we are excited about that.
Now, how did you come to determine? I know the answer to this, but I sometimes ask questions that I know the answer to. How did you determine this would be a great thing to do for Make a Difference Day?
This is actually one of the very first events that Women's then Junior Service League, now Women's Service League, did. That's the very first event, and we've done it every Make a Difference Day since then. And really what it comes down to is diapers and wipes are something that are highly needed.
Well, I'll say.
And there's no government subsubsidy for it. So while people can get WIC for food or, you know, help with different things like that, medical, any of those kinds of things, there are no government programs that provide diapers and wipes to babies.
So it's really an issue that is kind of a national issue that really isn't discussed that often because most people just assume that those things are subsidized. And the need for diapers is great, really, you know, all over the place. And it is really a direct it's directly correlated with poverty. It's a barrier for parents. You have to, you know, to put a kid in daycare, you have to pre-buy diapers and send a supply with your kids to have kids in
Absolutely.
Daycare.
And they're not cheap.
No.
No, they're not.
And a lot of people think, well, you know, why don't they just use cloth diapers? Well, cloth diapers, the
more expensive.
Well,
for
and the laundromats will not allow you to launder the cloth diapers due to human waste issue
no, you
in
have
a laundromat.
Subscribe to a service to do
correct.
To do those
so cloth diapers aren't an answer either. And so when this started, you know, back in 2008, you know, we really felt like this was a need, and it's grown and grown over the years. And last year, we collected 52,000 diapers,
wow,
84,000 wipes, and so really the local diaper banks really rely on Women's Service League to fill the diaper banks for the year. So, you know, the diaper banks are located at Serve Wenatchee Valley, Women's Resource Center, Sage Domestic Violence Center, St. Joe's Food Bank, the Lighthouse Ministries. And actually, we just had the diaper toss at the Wild game.
How did that go?
So on the first,
really good.
On the first
2 minutes in,
yeah, less than 2 minutes in, the Wild scored and out everybody threw the diapers and wipes onto the ice. We ended up collecting over 9,000 diapers.
Wow!
And so the majority of those actually were delivered to the Wenatchee Valley College Knights cupboard. So they actually have a food bank and a diaper bank at the college. Help college students, you know, who are, you know, struggling, going to school, taking care of kids.
You know, I should know this because I've changed many a diaper in my day. But how many diapers does an average child go through in a day? 10 sometimes?
Yeah.
Depending on what's going on.
They say about 7 to 12.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
About $1,000, you know, a month sometimes for, you know, the cost.
And if you're still romanticizing cloth diapers, let me tell you, they're a very interesting concept. They don't work worth a damn. There's no point in trying the cloth diaper. You'll just disappoint yourself.
I remember my sister used them when she, when one of my nephews was younger, but she was a stay-at-home mom that had a daycare in her house, and so at the time it worked for her. But I can't imagine, you know, a mom working outside of the house or, you know, someone else bringing a little one to a daycare with the cloth diapers. It's such a...
And stretching the use of a diaper mm-hmm. is really unhealthy for babies.
No, the baby, you know, baby's health will not allow that.
Right. And it causes a lot of stress for parents. So this is a really huge event for our community, and it's super easy to donate. We have tons of ways to donate. So on Saturday.
Let's start again with the donation for people who are just getting the hang of this.
So you can donate diapers, wipes, formula. We also take cash. The cash that we collect over the course of the diaper drive, we actually save up to do what we call Diaper Drive Part 2, which is where we go and buy a bunch of diapers using the cash, usually around March and April, to try to restock everybody again till we can get to this point. So
we're talking with Kelly Klein and Corey Bautista. We're talking about the diaper drive. Please help me out when we get to back after these words. Help me out in terms of this. There's a lot of people out there that have a child, beautiful baby. We don't want that baby to have diaper rash or to be shortchanged in any way as they go through their developing years. The first 2 years are so important. Diapers just help them keep their head on straight. And the mother, too. We'll be back right after this on News Radio 560 KPQ.
Next deal.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
1247, let's say it's 1248, why not? We're almost there. Kelly Klein and Corey Bautista are my special guests. We're talking about the diaper drive coming up. The Junior Service League is sponsoring it. That and many other things. Ladies, you have the floor. Let's talk about why we're doing the diaper drive and how to participate.
So Saturdays make a difference day. Diapers and wipes are not subsidized by the government. Our local diaper banks really rely on this event to fill up the diaper banks for basically the majority of the year. So there are so many ways for people to participate and donate even before Saturday. So right now at Applebee's, if you donate diapers at Applebee's, they will give you 10% off your meal, alcohol not included, at Applebee's, and that goes through the night of the 27th. Also, a very exciting, Dutch Brothers has partnered up with us again this year. And if you donate diapers, wipes, and formula at Dutch Brothers on Saturday, you will receive a 9-stamp card, which means your next Dutch Brothers drink would be free.
That's so a deal.
That's
at the South End Dutch Brothers.
Yes, so that is at the South End location only. You can start donating at 4:45 a.m.
For
and
all
it goes.
Early birds.
Dutch Bros does open early.
It goes until midnight, so that's a fun one. And then on Saturday we are at Fred Meyer from 10 to 4, Walmart bright and early from 8 to 4. And then Albertsons from 10 to 2. And then new this year will be in Kashmir at Martin's Marketplace.
So you can just duck right into those markets and come out with a big box
exactly.
of diapers.
From 10 to 2. So we make it really easy to donate. Also, the Dollar Tree, if you go to the dollar store to get ready for Halloween, add $1 to your bill at the end, and they'll throw in a diaper and wipes from the dollar store. So that makes it really easy to donate.
How many diapers do you go through a year helping the women who need them? And the children, for that matter.
Well, last year we collected over 52,000 diapers, and those, you know, really last about 6 to 7 months, I think, throughout the community.
Wow.
So it's an enormous amount.
And for the diaper drive part two, we literally buy pallets of diapers from Walmart, usually is where we go, and that restocks the bank. So they're going through a lot of them. It's a major need in our community.
And we do want to take a shout out to our sponsors. Guild Mortgage was our headline sponsor this year. And then our other sponsors, Confluence Health, Columbia Valley Community Health, Molina Healthcare, and Abundant Life. And then we actually had Hearst Construction come in at the last minute with a large great sponsorship donation. So we couldn't do it without our sponsors.
For ladies who want to help but all have diapers of their own for their own baby, how can they help the organization?
So we have our membership drive going on right now, and we're accepting new members until the end of November. So if you want to be part of our group, definitely stop by one of the tables and talk to some of our membership that'll be there. You can also go to our website, which is WSLNCW.org.
Better give that again.
WSLNCW.org. Or you can find us on Facebook too, Women's Service League of Wenatchee.
Or you can do what I did. I Googled Wenatchee Diaper Drive and got all the information I needed just before this interview.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
No problem. Yes.
Besides diaper drive, we do a lot of stuff in our community. We've got, you know, a lot of people recognize My Girlfriend's Closet, which is a pop-up shop that we do that funds a lot of the scholarships and grants that we give out throughout the year. A couple years ago, we added the prom dress giveaway, which is an event that provides prom dresses. A lot of these are new to gals of our community that are getting ready to go to prom or homecoming for the following year, those kinds of things. Last year, we gave out just over 200 prom dresses. We alter them there on the site. We help them. We've got shoes, purses, the whole nine yards.
Wow, that's so important.
And both of those events are coming in March of 2019, so stay tuned for those.
And then my personal favorite event that we do, because it is our kids helping kids, is our Touch-A-Truck event, which we have down at Town Toyota Center. We bring in vehicles of all shapes, sizes, even helicopters usually. And the kids and their families get to come and participate in that. And the money that we raise from that literally goes back into the community in grants to programs that help kids. So it's truly our kids helping kids. We also do lighthouse meals. We do different things throughout the community.
What don't you do? You've got your hand in everything.
We do it all.
Congratulations. That's Kelly Klein and Corey Bautista there with the Diaper Drive, which is the latest effort, but not the only effort, of the Junior Service League. And you should just Google Diaper Drive or the Junior Service League if you'd like to get involved and help them out, because they do just great work. Especially if you're a new mother, you don't have diapers, and boy, do you and your kid need them today,
yes.
Right? I mean, there's no waiting for that.
Absolutely.
I applaud your efforts, and good luck. Make a Difference Day this weekend. And each day beyond that day is also a day you can make a difference by helping out the Junior Service League.
Yes.
Thank you both for being here today.
Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
You're listening to the